Podcast incoming. The Atomic Age, Part 1. The Daily Earth Stood Still. Clark to Paradenecto.
Hello, and welcome to a special secret episode of 50 Years of Ship Robots. Shh, don't tell anybody, apart from all your friends. This is Matt. Just to give a quick intro to what is essentially a reposting of an old episode. We've been wanting to do this since Oppenheimer swept the board at the Oscars, because the creation and detonation of the atomic bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki unleashed a wave of science fiction films created in the atomic age in the early 1950s. And there were an awful lot of robot films in this sub-sci-fi genre. And we've chatted about a lot of them. So we just want to showcase them for you, because there are some great films in there and there are some not so great films. Good news though, the first one that we're going to replay is a great film. The Day the Earth Stood Still from 1951. And as a special extra treat, we also take a look at The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 2008 Keanu Reeves vehicle, in this podcast as well. So I'm going to shut up and let you enjoy what was episode 16 of the 50 Years of Shit Robots podcast series, first published way back on the 30th of January 2023. A more innocent time, perhaps. Anyway, enjoy! We've reached the 1950s.
Yep.
Which is all lovely and sleek and modern, isn't it?
Yes.
After the greyness of the 40s.
Everybody is very hopeful and they're looking towards the future in everything, in design, in homes, in TVs coming along. So and everybody has a future.
And is this because we're sort of half a decade on from the end of the war?
Yes, it's post-war optimism.
The film that we're looking at today is The Day the Earth Stood Still from 1951. We've also had a little peek at the 2008 remake. Essentially, though, the story is that a visitor from another world comes to Earth with a flipping great robot.
This is one of the first alien landings. Prior to that, there are several kind of alien-ish films, but not in this genre. So it's first. So he doesn't symbolise Russia or any kind of outside threat.
So what, if anything, was the impetus then to make an alien picture?
Well, we've just gotten over the war, and a lot of the scientists have been split up. But also there was something in the air as well from about 1944 to 1952. So in 1944, Foo Fighters were first recorded.
Okay.
Now, this was a name given to flying any UFO kind of thing. They didn't have the word the acronym UFO, by the way.
Right.
So anything that was reported by pilots, they just gave it the name Foo Fighters. Then in 1946, the Ghost Rockets in Sweden were recorded.
And what were they?
They were exactly the same as Foo Fighters. They were aerial phenomenon, as we'd call them now.
But so they weren't. They were. And what could aerial phenomena be?
We don't know. We still don't know. There's a bit of a resurgence at the moment of this. Then in 1947, we get the biggie. We get Roswell, and the first use of the term flying saucer is used.
So Roswell is lots of debris found.
Lots of debris. There was reports that this metal, you could crush it and then it would reform itself. There was bits of metal that was found that were unidentifiable.
Again, I'm just going from memory, but the hypothesis is that it was a weather balloon?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's an alternative theory in that it was a weather balloon, but the CIA were quite happy for everybody to believe that it was something else to keep them away from the truth and the area that it was in, which was Area 51.
And what was Area 51 sort of, what was it doing?
We don't know to this day.
Yeah, okay. So that, there's a mystery about what Area 51 is, and then people sort of filled in the blanks.
Yeah, and they were quite happy for us to do that because it kept us safe. It was bread and circuses.
And what about the... So it became a flying saucer sort of myth.
In the press.
And why a saucer?
Just the shape of it.
But I mean, if it was just debris, how did they come to the idea that it was a saucer shape?
They were building up to this, and there were reports coming in of these saucer-shaped items.
So what, people had seen them in the sky, saucer-shaped things.
So it had all built itself up, and it kind of culminated in the press in 1947 with Roswell. In 1947, they used the term flying saucer, and in 1950, the famous McMinnville UFO photographs are released, and they look like hubcaps.
Okay. And were they hubcaps?
Probably.
It's always the simplest explanation, isn't it?
And interestingly, 1951 is the day the Earth stood still, but in 1952, the acronym UFO is officially used by the military.
All right. So that's the sort of, that's what's going on in the world as people are sitting down in their cinemas and watching for the first time The Day the Earth Stood Still. If we can start at the very beginning of the film, we have a title sequence, which I thought was brilliant. I loved it. Not least because it feels like this is the first time we've had the music, this sort of sci-fi music, which has become such a cliche now. What's the instrument that's used for that?
It's called a theremin. It's the first time it's used in a major score. It had been used along with instruments like the Ornn Martineau, which are the very first electronic instruments. The thing about the theremin is you don't touch it at all. It's got two parts to the instrument. They're two kind of antennas, and you move your hands around an electric field.
I mean, it's like I said, it's such a cliche, that kind of music now.
It like, became a one-trick pony. It was like, it became, that was the music for aliens. But the thing that Bernard Herrmann was trying to do, he was trying to score something that doesn't exist. He was trying to score a music for an alien and for an alien encounter. And I think that must have been a really difficult thing to do. So he made it sound weird.
Yeah, I think it sounds amazing.
I love it.
And the fact that it did, it sort of basically, he basically created a genre, didn't he, when he did. Made that. That feels like it's slightly mirrored, that idea that this is new and really sets the bar very high for films that come after this. In terms of like the opening shots again feel so cliched now, but I would imagine that it was just that's only because they were copied so much afterwards. I'm talking about, you know, you've got, so it's a film about aliens, and the first few shots are the people on Earth discovering that something is headed towards Earth, and it's shots of radars moving. And it's shots of sort of scientists in rooms with headphones on and big machines with whirly things in the background while they're trying to, you know, analyze the data that they've got. And it's got so many lovely things that then become cliche in film. But things like traveling around the world and seeing different newscasters around the world, you know, basically all broadcasting the same bit of information. That again is such a massive cliche now, but I think just would have looked so cool. And I've just written down here, why is the news presenter wearing a hat?
Oh, come on. It's very hattage.
There's so much.
I think we created that word. So many hats. May as well use it.
I love the fact. I mean, someone like waking up from a coma, from who went into a coma in the 1950s, they must think, where the hell have all the hats gone?
Or if he wakes up from his coma, he's going to go, where's my hat?
Where is my hat?
I'm still doing this on the table. Oh no, you can't see what I'm doing.
But he would be, surely if you were in a coma in the 50s, you'd go into a coma in wearing your hat, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course you would.
Of course you would. And we pretty soon into the film get the first sort of visual effect shots of the flying saucer as it enters Earth's atmosphere and can be seen by the inhabitants of Washington, D.C. What did you think of the special effects?
Oh, the soundscape is brilliant. And the build-up and the people staring and...
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
But it feels like 10 years on from, or well, 15 years on from Flash Gordon, the special effects have significantly improved.
Well, the director's, Robert Wise, he's treaded the boards. He's done his bit. He's and there's money in this film.
I think that the nice thing about it is that they recognise, Robert Wise, or whoever it was who made the decision, recognises that less is more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the shark.
It's like the shark, exactly. And I think that I thought the special effects were good as the ship lands, and then when the ship is in situ, I think the ship's really nice as well.
Oh, it's beautiful! I love the ship.
Yeah,
seamless.
Just to explain a bit more about that, the design of the spaceship.
They wanted the spaceship, and I think they achieved that with the spaceship and Gort, to be made out of like the one piece of fluid type metal.
And what do you know what it was that motivated that decision?
Just to make it look utterly alien.
It looks wonderful. And then we get our first view of the alien, who is called Klaatu. Klaatu basically appears from the ship. I love this so much. He appears from the ship, and there's obviously lots of people, lots of Earthlings looking, you know, what's going on, and there's lots of army people there with their fingers on triggers, you know, pointing at the alien ship. No one knows quite whether the aliens are going to be friendly or not. And Klaatu appears, and one of the first things he does is he reaches into his costume, his alien outfit, and pulls out a very gunny looking thing.
Spiky gunny
thing, and points it at the Earthlings. And then when somebody fires at him and causes the spiky gunny thing to smash to the ground and break, and he says that the spiky gunny thing was a gift for the president that would have enabled him to study life on the other planets
by jamming it in his eye.
But I love that it's sort of like he's basically like really sort of condescendingly sort of like telling us off for our first reaction being to gun him down. But it's like, well, don't make it look like a gun then, you fool. What were you expecting?
You've come down here to warn us. You know what we like, and you whip that out and point it at us.
Yeah, yeah. As we later find out, he has come to Earth basically because we're so gun happy. And we're, you know, so it's like, what the hell did you expect, you great Klaatu knobber?
You big Klaatu.
But I thought that was very funny. And then when Klaatu is gunned down, then we see, I mean, the reason that we're here, really.
Yeah.
We see Gort.
He appears.
Yeah, for the first time. That's very good. Very good. And he looks very imposing, I suppose, doesn't he?
He does, because he's played. He is a suit with a seven inch tall actor in it who did not like the experience because it was incredibly claustrophobic. There is one scene where Gort is going towards the actress, and you can just see the air holes underneath.
Oh, really?
It does look like it's part of the design, but you do glimpse them.
So again, you've mentioned this before, but it's probably worth mentioning now, that the design for Gort was supposed to be fluid like the ship. Is that right?
Yes. But he's just creases.
He does crease, doesn't he?
He does crease.
I know.
He creases at the joints.
Yeah, his little silver leather trousers.
Yeah, they do. And he was padded as well, so the poor guy inside was boiling. Apparently, they would have the suit open at the back if it was a forward shot, so that he was getting a bit of air in.
What's amazing is that I've just finished reading Anthony Daniels' sort of autobiography of his experience as C-3PO, And what comes across loud and clear is how much torture you are put through if you're a performer and you've got to wear a sort of like a full-on suit like that. And this is 51 and Star Wars is 77, and it feels like there's just been no there's been no advancement in the technology. I mean, he was saying, Anthony Daniels was saying that they used to do that same trick where they'd have a version of C-3PO that was backless so that he could get a bit of air. But it's just you sort of think with all of that, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Tin Man in Wizard of Oz, who the first actor was nearly killed because of the makeup that they used.
Yeah.
Feels like you are taking a massive health risk by agreeing to become a robot in a film in Hollywood. And I wonder if that gives the performance anything.
No, I think C-3PO, he's instructed by the restriction.
Yeah, it feels like movements. He is. Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of works, doesn't it, I think, really well in that sense, despite all the horrible discomfort that he had making that. But I can imagine that this would have been hideous.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And plain gort.
7 foot, 7 inches tall, and he's got to walk in that outfit.
Yeah. And it does look... I mean, again, it's so hard as a 2023 person watching this. I'd never seen this before. This was the first time I'd seen it in full. And it just looks a bit silly, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think for me, when I watched this when I was a kid, I didn't like this film because there wasn't enough kind of robot action. There wasn't enough laser guns. It was, it's a cerebral film.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
And Gort does an awful lot of just standing around.
He does. I mean, for almost the entire film, he just stands in one position. And in fact, they lock him in, don't they, in some crazy new...
In his own plastic cupboard.
Yeah, he does have his own plastic see-through cupboard that they create for him. He does get to move, and he does have a moment of action, which... it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's Gort stands guard of the ship while the action... While Klaatu is taken off to be examined by the military, and then he escapes and then goes on a little journey of his own. So we're away from the ship for quite a long period in this film, but towards the end of the film we return when a child who gets to know Klaatu comes to the ship, and he sees and misconstrues the action of the robot, really, doesn't he?
Well, because he knocks two guards out.
He does knock two guards out, but he does it for the... he does it for their own good. For the good of the planet.
Apart from the spiky gun thing, everything they do is benign because Gort disables the guns but leaves the people. When he first comes out, when he's protecting Klaatu, he dissolves a couple of tanks and guns in the arms of soldiers, which they just sort of stand back.
Yeah.
He does kill two soldiers later on.
He does kill people, doesn't he? I think that is such a weird one. It's such a left turn in this because you notice the fact that he only removes the guns. He kind of disintegrates the guns, the weapons of people. He doesn't touch the people to begin with. And then you think, why does he then kill people?
He's a policeman.
Yeah, but... but why is it sort of brilliantly set up that he's only getting rid of the instruments of war, and then he that he will leave people alone, and then he doesn't, and he kills people, and then at the end we're told that he's blooming well a massive psychopath.
He's part of a psychopath army.
Yeah.
So there's a scene in a cab where Klaatu is talking to Helen, and he says, "I'm worried about Gort. I'm afraid what he might do if anything should happen to me." And she says, "Gort, but he's only a robot. What can he do without you?" And he said, "There is no limit to what he can do. He could destroy the Earth." And he says it in a tone that he's kind of terrified of the robot.
Yeah. I thought this was, I have to say, as in terms of storytelling, I thought this was awful. Because because I think it comes from nowhere, and it sort of really changes the parameters of the story. And I can see why they've done it. They've done it because they wanted to add some jeopardy to the final act of the film. But it's so unsignposted because Gort is so benign in the first two-thirds of the film. For him suddenly then to be revealed as just this kind of like chaos machine that if anything happens to Klaatu, he'll just kill everything, I think is just really weird.
But it is kind of, it's kind of frightening, I think, what they propose.
It's terrifying. It feels like it's got at its heart that sort of Dawkins, Richard Dawkins-esque idea of God, in that if you say that there's a God, then you have to accept that God as a complex being has been created. So who created God? Do you know what I mean? Saying that there's a God doesn't answer the question who who is God, because there's always a higher power sort of thing. And it feels a bit like that.
Ad infinitum.
Yeah, that with Gort, it's like, well, if he's the police, then who's policing them? You know, it's like, it feels like it's completely set up to fail, this. And yet they're the ones who are being judge and jury to Earth. Yeah.
You mentioned God.
Oh, yeah.
So Klaatu comes from above and lands.
Yes.
He adopts the name Carpenter.
Oh, yes, he does.
He gets shot and killed, and then he's brought back to life.
Rises from the dead. My God, he's Jesus.
Shh.
He's Jesus.
Spoiler.
Wow, that's brilliant. I mean, yeah, that is... I can't believe that I'd been so foolish as to not see that.
I mean, well, that's... the same here until now.
So I wondered whether there should be a sequel to The Day the Earth Stood Still, which focuses on the robots going mad.
Oh, well, yeah, we've got that, Terminator.
Okay, so do we want to say anything else about that one?
Well, Klaatu Barada Nicta, come on, we've got to mention that.
So this is the phrase that that Klaatu says if he is killed.
If anything happens to him.
Yeah, then that's what you've got to say to Gort to stop him going mad. Yeah.
And Patricia Neal was bemused at this ridiculous phrase, and she was kind of thinking, "Oh, this is just a low point for me and this film." And little did she know that the phrase would be just repeated over and over again. And in the it's been used famously by Ash from Evil Dead. I think it's in. In one of the Evil Dead, Army of Darkness.
Words, right. Klaatu, Barada, necktie, nectar, nickel. Definitely an N-word.
In Return of the Jedi, Jabba the Hutt's employees are named Klaatu and Barada.
Are they really? I really like that. And do we know where it came from? Does it mean anything, or is it just...
No, I think it's just gibberish.
Just gibberish. Just sounds nice.
Yeah.
Klaatu Barada Nicta. Nictu.
Nicto.
Nicto.
Other films directed by Robert Wise are West Side Story.
Yes.
Sound of Music. The Andromeda Strain. And Star Trek The Motion Picture.
That is pretty impressive, isn't it? Are we saying that The Day the Earth Stood Still could have done with a few musical numbers?
Oh, I'd pay to see that.
A tap dancing Gort.
Oh, wow.
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? So we watched the 1951 version of The Day the Earth Stood Still, and then just for kicks, we watched the the 2008 remake starring Keanu Reeves and Jennifer Connelly.
Yes.
I think that my sort of big take of the Day the Earth Stood Still 2008, which is essentially the same film except there's an environmental angle, rather than it being that the alien is there because they're worried about us launching nuclear missiles into space. They're basically saying that Earth is a precious planet because it can sustain life, and we've screwed it up, and we don't deserve to inhabit the planet anymore. And so Gort in the 2008 film basically is kind of made up of nanobots, who then he kind of releases himself into the air, and the nanobots basically eat everything.
And his name has become an acronym.
So is it a machine or a living thing?
It seems to be some sort of silicone-based hybrid. We're calling it GORT, Genetically Organized Robotic Technology.
Sounds the military and their acronyms.
And that was not in the first film, was it?
It's his name in the first film.
Yeah, my sort of big takeaway of this film is that it's just so boring. One of the things I like about the first film is that, it, as you said, it rattles through the story.
It does.
This one just takes forever to get going.
And the first one is cosy. It feels kind of homely.
I mean, at the heart of the 51 film is this idea that they're so sanctimonious. Klaatu is so preachy.
The universe grows smaller every day, and the threat of aggression by any group, anywhere, can no longer be tolerated. There must be security for all, or no one is secure. Now, this does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly.
But do you think that would have been seen at the time as like, oh, we must listen to the wise alien? Or is it like, do one, Klaatu, because yes, you're doing my head in? Because I definitely felt that about the 2008 film. I mean, he's so wrong as well, isn't it? His take is so wrong about Earth. And the idea that you can... You know, you can just see all of the ills, but don't see all of the wonders. And it's just such a horrible scene where he's in the scientist's office and he listens, he hears Bach, and he's like, maybe these humans aren't so bad after all.
I did like the James Hong scenes where they're suggesting there's been aliens watching us on the planet for a long time.
Yeah, and doing nothing. Sweet Fanny Adams about the problem as they see it.
Yeah, but just falling in love with us and not wanting to leave.
Yes, because we're so blooming great.
When I watched it, I was thinking, is that the guy from Big Trouble in Little China
and
Everything Everywhere All at Once?
It is.
And there he is. He's a workhorse.
He is a workhorse, isn't he? Can't deny that. Okay, so what did you think of... we've got to rate Gort. Could we rate him in both films? What did you think of the 1951 Gort?
I really did love him, and I think the youth of that time really took him to heart. So he's not shit.
He's iconic, isn't he?
He is iconic.
And I think
he's a brave attempt at doing something early and robot-y.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think that the way he acts is a bit, you know... I find it so hard to believe that he is the sort of he will be the destruction of the planet because he's so lumbering and sort of clumsy.
He is, but he's broodingly sinister.
He is, and I did like the fact it made me laugh out loud when I saw it. There's a scene where Gort is moving towards Helen, who's the sort of female lead, and he is wandering through an auditorium and he's sort of wandering through a load of chairs.
Yes.
And I thought, at last, a robot who can navigate the chair. The first one we've seen.
Oh, that would be so funny if he's taken out with not just a chair, but a foldy chair.
A foldy chair, yeah. So I didn't buy that. I didn't buy all that they said about him because I don't think that the reality of him matched the hype.
No, but I did like his design. I love the kind of the helmet, the visor, and the sinister kind of light that just flickers and licks and almost comes out of the visor.
Yeah, no, that was very good. And also I didn't like the fact that he was a sort of a policeman, but there was no regulatory system in place to keep tabs on him.
And where was Isaac Asimov in all of this? He should have been there in the audience, shouldn't he?
Should have been. Okay, what do you think about Gort in the 2008 film?
Oh, so much of a lost opportunity. Because he's a composite, isn't he, of nanobots. There were some pretty good special effects in it, I thought, when the nanobots were released and they start to dissolve things like stadiums and trucks and people.
Yeah, that's true. There was some good stuff there. And again, the deaths that Gort caused in this... I mean, I'm assuming it's like runs to maybe the millions.
Yeah, I mean, half of New York is dissolved.
And yet, you know, that's not mentioned at all.
One death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic.
That's right. Well, Yabu sucks to Gort. So are we saying that the Gort in the 1951 film is good and the Gort in the 2008 film not so good?
No.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. Right, well, that's it. The Day the Earth Stood Still is an absolute monster film in the pantheon of robot films. And we have just done it.
We've done it.
We've scaled that mountain. So there you go. That was the first in our series highlighting films that were inspired by the events that took place in the Oppenheimer movie, aka the creation and detonation of the bombs at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We'll have more in this little series coming soon, so keep the channels open, and we'll see you next time for another thrilling installment of 50 Years of Shit Robots. Goodbye.
End of transmission. Repeat. End of transmission. Go about your business. We robots will not harm you.